Do you have your shirt on?
Last I checked, I did. Yes, why?
Weapons Radio. Do you have your shirt on?
Weapons Radio. Red Radio, Episode 7. Sports in West Coast. With Hall of Famer, Hal McCoy.
Hello, Reds fans. This is Mike from WhackReds.com. You're listening to 14 Questions, Episode 7, with Hal McCoy. How are you doing today, Hal?
I'm doing fine, Mike. Hope everybody else is doing well.
Before you retired after last year's 2009 season, you wrote for the Reds for 37 years. You attended over 7,000 games and wrote over 18,000 stories covering Pete Rose all the way to Pete Maccannon. You're doing all kinds of work at Fox Sportsnet. You do your normal Sunday Ask Hal column, which is great. Would you please pitch your blog to any of our listeners out there that might not know what you're doing over at the Dayton Daily News, Real McCoy?
Yeah, I do a blog. I did a blog when I was still covering the Reds as a beat writer. And so when the newspaper decided that they couldn't afford to cover the Reds either home or away anymore and offered a buyout, I took a retirement. But they also offered me 1/4 of the salary that I was making at the time if I would continue to write a blog 4 or 5 times a week and do my Sunday Ask Hal.
Oh.
And also along the way, FoxSportsOhio.com offered me a position covering all the home games and writing stories after the games and also doing a interactive chat. Every home game I talk to all the fans, they send in questions and I answer them. And it's a lot of fun. It makes the game go a lot faster and gets the fans involved and keeps me active. So now I just tell people I'm semi-retired, but sometimes I think I'm doing more work than I did before.
Well, that's a full-time job, that's for sure.
It has been. The only thing I don't have to do is travel anymore, and that suits me fine. No more getting up at 4 a.m. to catch an airplane and hope my suitcase gets there and hope my flight's not canceled and hope my hotel room is there when I get there. It's taking a lot of stress out of the job.
How did you get into writing, and more importantly, how did you get so into baseball?
Well, I played baseball since I was like 3 or 4 years old. My father was a semi-pro pitcher, and he used to take me out in the backyard and start me playing catch and throwing the ball around like by the time I could walk. And I played Little League and Pony League and high school and American Legion, and I got a partial scholarship to Kent State University to play baseball there. And it didn't take me long to figure out that I couldn't hit the curveball, and the college ball was about as far as I was going to go in baseball. If I wanted to stay with it, I was going to have to do something else. Well, my other passion and love was newspapers. And as a kid, I always read a baseball beat writer who covered the Cleveland Indians for the Akron Beacon Journal named Jim Schlemmer. And I would read his stories every day. And so when I went to Kent State University, my major was journalism, and decided, okay, I'll just combine the two. I'll write and cover baseball, so I'll cover both my passions in one endeavor.
You mentioned your retirement, how the Dayton Daily News shrunk their Ohio sports budget, basically. Mostly you're just getting Associated Press stories through that newspaper nowadays. What do you think the future of the newspaper is, and just the future of reporting in general? And do you think the lack of a local perspective on the team is affecting the attendance and just the general popularity of the Reds recently?
Well, you know, it's not a good thing to watch the newspaper business die, and that's what's happening. It's happening all over the country. I've seen a lot of my good friends who are baseball beat writers get put out to pasture, and they're a lot younger than I am. And I'm very fortunate in the fact that I was at retirement age when this happened, so it didn't affect me that much. But I really feel bad for a lot of the young guys coming into the business, because newspapers are dying. There's no doubt about that. And the internet is the future. But the one good thing is they always need somebody to write, whether it's for the newspaper or whether it's for the internet. And I think everything is just swinging over from newspapers to the internet and all the websites that are out there and are available now. So I don't think that's affecting attendance that much, the demise of the newspapers. It's just sad to pick up a great newspaper like the Dayton Daily News. Used to cover everything, the Bengals, Ohio State, the Reds, anything major, and be there in person. And now they don't even leave Montgomery County to cover anything. It's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, you've been covering the Reds for a long time before all of this, before the internet, before blogging, before Twitter. I myself grew up reading you in Dayton, which was fantastic, living so far away from Cincinnati, but still having a point of view that was local. Do you think these new advancements in media helps or hinders journalism?
Well, it certainly hinders the newspaper business, which is, as a dinosaur myself and a dying breed, that's what you think of when you think about journalism. But that's going by the wayside. Now it's Facebook and Twitter and blogging and, it's a whole new world. It's a whole new world of communications, and we all have to adjust to it. And the sooner we adjust it to it, the better off everybody will be. And, as a guy who was back covering the baseball team with a typewriter back in the 60s and 70s, it wasn't easy to make the switch. First of all, it wasn't even easy to make the switch to laptop computers. And now when you go into all the media that is available now and making the switch, it's something you have to do, and it's something that I had to do, and now I enjoy it, and it's the way information is decimated now.
Let's talk about these exciting Reds of this season. You said in late June that they would win the division by 5 or more games. Why were you so sure that they were going to do that with over 3 months left to go in the season, and how do you think they got to where they are right now?
Well, number one, back in June, it was pretty evident that the other four teams in the division, the Brewers and the Pirates and the Cubs and the Astros, were not very good. They were not going to put up any kind of a challenge, so it was going to come right down to the Reds and Cardinals. And I thought the Reds were every bit as good as the Cardinals. At the time I made that prediction, the Reds were playing very good baseball. It was at a time when they were coming back from behind to win games and winning games in their last at-bat. And no matter what Dusty Baker did, whatever the pinch hitter he used, if somebody was hurt, whoever he plugged in, that person would always contribute something. And it just looked to me like the Reds were the team of the year, the kind of a anointed team this year, the one that was going to be able to hang on and do it all. So I thought, the Cardinals had been there, I know, so many times every year they're there. But I just thought this year it looked to me like it was going to be the Reds' year, so I made that predicament, and fortunately it looks like it's going to come true.
One thing that's definitely got us there is the pitching. Volquez pitched 8 innings, struck out 6. I think it's his third good outing since he did rehab in Dayton. Do you think he'll make the rotation behind Arroyo and Cueto, and who else do you think will make the playoff rotation?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from what Volquez has done his last 3 starts, to me, he might even be the number 2 starter. I mean, Arroyo's going to be number 1 with his 16 wins and makes his start every time out there. Cueto and Volquez, it doesn't matter which way they go, they'll go 2 or 3. And in the first round of the playoffs, of course, it's a five-game best of five, first one to win 3 wins. So they probably only need 4 starters. And the 4th starter will probably be between Homer Bailey and Travis Wood. Now, if they play the Philadelphia Phillies, if I'm the Reds, Travis Wood is in there. The Phillies are loaded with left-handers, and the last time Wood faced him, he almost pitched a perfect game against him, so he would be a logical choice. If there's somebody else, I think it still comes down between Bailey and Wood to get that 4th spot.
And you mentioned Arroyo is obviously a lock with his 16 wins. Do the Reds need to re-sign him? I think it's a $13 million buyout for next year. How important is that for the Reds?
I think it's very important, even though the fact the Reds are overloaded with starting pitching and they're going to have a pick of 6 or 7 starters the same way as it was this spring training, and they're talking about making Aroldis Chapman a starter next year. You're talking about a whole bunch of young pitchers, and to me they need one veteran presence, one guy who's been there and done that, one guy who's had success, and you're talking about Bronson Arroyo. You're talking about a guy who has never been on the DL in his life, has never missed a start, gives you 200 innings every year, gives you 15, 16 wins. That's a pretty good anchor on any pitching staff, plus the fact what he can do to help the young players. I think it's very important that they sign him and bring him back.
All right, Hal, we all know that you tell it like it is, and we all know what happened when you asked Brandon Phillips, why do you hate the St. Louis Cardinals? Do you agree with Brandon Phillips? Can you remember any other player being that adamant about his feelings towards another team?
Yeah, I can think of a lot of cases, but they don't go public with it. And I give Brandon Phillips credit that he said what a lot of other teams think, what a lot of other players think, what a lot of the media thinks. And he came out and said it, put his name to it, and I admire him even more. And he didn't back down when he had a chance to say he was misquoted. He had a chance to throw me under the bus and say it was off the record, or say it he was quoted out of context. He didn't do any of those things. In fact, he came up to me the next day and kind of punched me on the arm with a big smile on his face and said, "Great story." Yeah, I think he was just saying what a lot of people think and was brave enough to do it publicly.
Will you kindly describe your love-hate relationship with the game of baseball?
I don't have any hate relationship with the game of baseball. I love baseball. I've loved baseball all my life. It's been my life. I mean, I've covered baseball for 38 years. I always tell my wife that someday I'm going to have to get a real job, but I never did. I mean, think about it. I love baseball. I love to travel, and I love to write. I got to do all three for 38 years, and I got paid for it. It's just something that I've always loved and I'm passionate about. And I always told everybody that when they asked me when I would retire, that I said I would retire when my head hits the laptop. The Dayton Daily News took that away from me, but fortunately there's some other people and other avenues out there that I've been able to continue doing it, and maybe I will do it until my head hits the laptop.
Yeah, it's got to be great. And another thing I really enjoy that you do is when you visit Marty and the Cowboy in the second inning of Reds broadcast on 700.
Are you going to eat all this?
What would be your fondest memory of Marty, Jeff, Joe Knoxall? Just reminisce about that, would you?
It's a whole lot of fun to do that because Marty makes it so easy. Every time I would go in the booth, Marty would say, "What do you got for me?" As if to ask me, what topic do you want to talk about? And I would say every time, nothing. And he would get a disgusted look on his face and shake his head. And then we'd go on the air, and he'd have two or three great questions. He just made it so easy. And probably the biggest thrill I had of going in there every day was seeing Joe Knoxall in there. And after Joe passed away, every time I'd go in there, and while, I loved the Cowboy and loved seeing him sitting in there, it just wasn't the same without Nucky sitting there. I really miss Joe Knoxall.
You can't talk about the Reds this season without mentioning Chapman, which we already have. You said they eventually want him to be a starter next year. What role do you see him playing in the postseason for the Reds this year?
I think he'll do exactly what he's doing right now. He'll be a setup guy, come in the seventh, eighth inning, or come in to face a left-hander or two. When needed, and he's done a pretty good job at it. I think he's only had one difficult time. The rest of the time, he's either blowing that 103, 104 mile an hour fastball past him or buckling their knees with that unbelievable slider. He's got a great changeup, and he hasn't even had to use it that much yet because he's doing so well with his other two pitches. But eventually, they're going to see that changeup too, and it's going to make him even more effective. But I think he's going to be a very good weapon in the postseason in that setup role.
Hal, you coined the phrase Big Red Machine. You covered the wire-to-wire Reds. What would be your favorite Reds moment ever?
Wow, you mentioned earlier that I'd covered 7,000 games, and actually I think the count was like 25,000 stories I've written, so it's very, very difficult to pick out one. But Pete Rose's hit to break Ty Cobb's record. Everybody knows that there's no cheering in the press box. Jerome Holzman, an old sports writer from Chicago, wrote a book called No Cheering in the Press Box. We're just not allowed to do that. But for the only time in 38 years of covering baseball, when Pete's hit fell into left center field, the entire press box stood and cheered and applauded. And that's something I had never seen before and haven't seen since. So that was a very special moment. Plus, Tom Browning's perfect game has to rank up there. It's not often you get to see a perfect game, even though there's been a couple of them this year, but that's the only one I have seen in my 38 years, and Then the Carlton Fisk home run in Game 6 of the 1975 World Series would rank in there. So that would probably be my top three.
As we're getting to the end of 14 questions, I want to ask you about the end of Jim Edmonds' career. Only 42 players have ever hit a home run in their last at-bat. Glenn Braggs would be the only Cincinnati Red. He said he was expecting the injury. Do you think the Reds are going to push him to make the postseason, or do you think he's done?
It depends on how serious that injury is. They certainly like to have him around. He's got experience in the postseason, and as he showed last night by hitting a home run in his first at-bat before he limped around the bases, he's the kind of guy that they could use on the postseason. But, you know, he's been hurt ever since the Reds picked him up from Milwaukee, and it doesn't look to me like he's going to be able to make it. But I'd like to see him keep him on the roster just to be around Jay Bruce and Drew Stubbs and Chris Heisey and Chris Galega. Those guys, he is helping tremendously. I don't know if, you know, you can waste a roster spot just to have the guy do that, but you could still, you know, have him around to do that until the end of the year, because I think he's pretty much said he's already going to retire, and we probably did see his last at-bat unless he has some kind of miraculous recovery.
Our 14th question always revolves around the Hit King. You were at the forefront of the local coverage covering Pete Rose in 1989. I'm aware that he's been making amends with people like yourself and Johnny Bench lately. Do you think he'll ever make amends with the game of baseball?
I think he's trying hard. I think he has tried hard. He's saying all the right things. He probably has made amends at most levels, but I don't think it's going to be enough ever to get him reinstated. And we all know he belongs in the Hall of Fame. 4,256 hits. I mean, think about that. If a guy plays 20 straight years and has 200 hits every year, that's 4,000 hits, and he's still 256 short. That's never going to happen. He's going to be the Hit King forever. But I don't think he's going to be reinstated. I know he won't be reinstated as long as Bud Selig is commissioner. And without being reinstated, he's not eligible for the Hall of Fame. So I don't think he's going to be there. Shoeless Joe Jackson was banned in 1919. He hasn't been reinstated, and unfortunately, I don't think Pete will be either.
Hal, I want to thank you a lot for your time. It's been an honor and a pleasure speaking with you. Is there anything else you have for our listeners?
I appreciate all the support I've gotten over my 37 years from my readers, and I hope to continue doing it for as long as I can, and I hopefully I'll be fortunate enough this year after 15 years, and we'll finally get to see the Reds in the postseason, and I'm really looking forward to that.
It's exciting, and we'll be following you till your head hits the laptop, that's for sure.
Hi, Mike. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Hal.
Take care.
Crying in baseball?